Hey, welcome to another Thursday evening edition of Sports Talk here on Care Radio, brought to you by Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, High Voltage Bar and Dance, Exchange Bank, and Petro Convenience Store. Gus Counts with me here, Tom Counts, and what a great schedule we've got coming up. We'll be talking about the games we've had last night. We got games tomorrow night, next night. Tomorrow night, we'll start the high school basketball season. And can you believe it's December already and it's here? And ACCHS will be at Mar Hill Mount Academy. We'll have those games tomorrow on K Radio. Saturday, the Benedictine Ravens on the road at the Penn Gym. BC at William Penn. 2 o'clock for the ladies and the guys at 4. And then back up next Tuesday, MHMA and Jefferson County North. So lots of games, a hectic time. And Gus, we need to take a quick glance into the rearview mirror at the football season that was, as for all intents and purposes and for all of the high school teams and local teams around here, the season is in the books.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of crazy that it doesn't seem that long ago we were starting the football season, and now we're to the end of all of our football coverage, at least when it comes to high school or college. And you start at the big class, Class 6A. Wow, what a magical season for Manhattan High, right? The Indians finish the season 13-0, win the state title against Gardner Edgerton in double overtime, 21-20. You know, they knocked off Derby the week before, 28-23. They snuck past Wichita Northwest, 27-18. So, again, they didn't do anything spectacular, but all they did was win, right?
Yeah, and that's what it boils down to. And you cannot look at their championship and say, oh, they got the easy way through this thing, because they had anything but the easy way. So congratulations, Manhattan, and the 6A title. Going down to Class 5A, Gus, we've been there. We've seen this team in years gone by, and it was a win for the Panthers of Mill Valley.
Yeah, I mean, you could have fast-forwarded through this, simulated it all you want, and Mill Valley finishes the season 12-1. They get another state title to put up on the wall. They knocked off Mays 28-14 in the playoffs.
And Mays, by the way, in the entire playoffs, the only team that scored a point against Mill Valley. How, that's the craziest number that just leaps at me.
Yeah, you know, you go all the way back to, at that point, they hadn't given up a score since the week before Halloween. Right? So you go back almost a whole month that they hadn't given up a point. So spectacular season there for Mill Valley.
Then we jump to Class 4A, and
I feel like that logo is just painted in as the state champion every year, right?
It kind of is, as it was the Stags. Bishop Miege taking the 4A championship in a 35-14 win over Wamego. And Miege, again, not an easy route through there. They had Ottawa. We saw them early in the year. Miege handles them. They get through Eudora. They beat Piper, scoring 68 over STA, 38-28, and a 35-14 state title for Miege.
Yeah, and for Miege, you talk about that game against St. Thomas Aquinas in the semifinals to get to the championship game. That was avenging a loss early on in the season. St. Thomas Aquinas had beat Miege 29-26, but the Stags 5-2 in the Eastern Kansas League. Well, they finished the season 11-2 in a state championship, so hats off to them in Class 4A.
Class 3A saw one of a couple of Big 7 teams that made the state championship game. It was the Houlton Wildcats coming up a little bit short to the perennial champion, Indians Andale, defeating Houlton 28-0. You don't often see a Houlton team get blanked.
Yeah, not really, right? I mean, that's what's kind of surprising. But you talk about Andale, they've been a program who just knows how to win, right? Head coach Dylan Schmidt has been there for a while. They went 13-0 on the season, and in the playoffs, they were able to, you know, put together a nice little run.
Andale, in the entire playoffs, gave up one score. They beat Goodland 63-0. Pratt got six on them late in the game, 45-6. Beat Rock Creek 48-0. Beat Clay Center 36-0. And then go on to beat Holton 28-0. We're talking a little defense here, man.
Yeah. And that's the team that was able to score a lot of points, too, this year. Jumping down to Class 2A, and, well, it was the Thunder, right? Nemaha Central knocking off Kingman in the state title game, 33-17. And for Nemaha Central, along the way, they get a win over Sabetha in the state semifinal, so they got to like that, too. But, you know, look at their playoffs. They went through Pleasant Ridge, Rossville, Humboldt, beat Sabetha, and then knocked off Kingman, who was having kind of that magical season, 33-17 in the championship game.
Yeah, Kingman getting to the title game, an undefeated team, ending up the season at 12-1. They got to the championship game with a 2-OT win, and does that make a difference? I mean, are you still tired after a 2-OT game, or at this point in the season, it doesn't matter, does it?
I think at this point in the season, you just, yeah.
Class 1A, and it was the Bears. Not the Ditka Bears, but the St. Mary's Bears. Is a high-scoring free-for-all, 44-41. How do you give up 41 points and win a state title? Well, you score 44, and that's what they did over Inman.
Yeah, and you talk about the end of that game. St. Mary's gets the ball back with like a minute left and had to drive the length of the field to score a touchdown, and they did just that, right? They knock off Inman 44-41, and St. Mary's caps off, you know, a nice season. So, again, lots of really good teams at this time of year, but there were, I don't know, two, three maybe state champions that just don't surprise you every year.
Nope. And, by the way, if you wonder, and I kind of always do, East and West, because the state is broken down. They've redone the playoffs a few years ago to make sure there was an East half of the state and a West half of the state representative in the championship game. This year, three East, two West teams. But, I mean, you got to define West. Where's West in Kansas, okay? Because Manhattan, a West team, mm-hmm. Not that far west, and of course Andale down in the Wichita area. So they are give them West.
So Nemaha Central finishes the season undefeated. Andale finished the season undefeated. Hold on, we were flying back through there. I was just trying to see. So we've got two undefeated state champions. Miege did not go undefeated.
It's because they're playing all those 6A teams early in the year.
Mill Valley lost a game. Whoops. And you jump back to Class 6A, and that was Manhattan High, and they finished undefeated. So out of the, six classifications, three of them finished with undefeated seasons. You had Nemaha Central, you had Manhattan High, and what did we figure? We had another one in there. So, you know, again, pretty impressive to have three undefeated teams this year.
And now we flip our sights to basketball and a quick look at that. Awfully early to say, but there's going to be some really good teams, and it's an exciting time. You know, the teams who were playing a week ago in football, not going to have a lot of bounce back time, but you know what? You're in good shape. You're an athlete. Get out there and play some hoops, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good games already. I think that's kind of the fun thing about basketball is, you know, you jump right into the schedule because you're going to play a lot of games. You know, Atchison is going to be home with Rossville. That's already tomorrow night. You're going to get Jackson Heights traveling to Royal Valley. That should be an interesting trip down 75. You take a Class 1A versus
yep.
a Class 3 or 4A.
Maybe the biggest three in the state had been 4A for many years.
Yeah, so you're going to get some of those. Valley Falls at Oskaloosa, McLouth at Horton. We talk about the county rivalry that's going to be ACCHS and Moore Hill Mount Academy. Those two teams started the season last year together. So it's kind of that time of the year. It should be a lot of fun.
Yep. Tigers have high aspirations for a big, big season. And I'll be interested to see how these teams look here early in the year. Tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. Switch our focus to college football when we return. More Sports Talk right after this. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on K Radio. Gus Counts with me, Tom Counts, and Gussie, Benedict and Ravens, we're talking about high school teams ending their seasons last week. The Ravens also ended a magical year in 2022 last week with their trip to Marion, Indiana and Indiana Wesleyan. Ravens coming up on the short end of that one, 24-13. And that all said, it is tough as it is, A, great crowd on hand. The Ravens had a super following. And B, how many schools get 11 win football seasons? The Ravens wanted a couple more, but still, they're going to look back at this and they're going to be lying to their grandkids for years how good this team was. But really, they won't be lying because it was that good.
You know, I would say we, and it was more so you because you're better at this than I am. You kept saying throughout the season, probably about when we got to game 6 or 7, start enjoying it, right? Enjoy the ride. Enjoy what is happening because it started to become a special season. And once you got over the heartbreak that was that Grandview game early on in the season, all of a sudden you're like, man, this seems pretty good. And then they kept moving up in the standings and kept winning games in the conference. And you're like, this team's really good. And so you started to figure out how good this team could be. And then it's one of those things about how far can they make it in the playoffs. Again, a special season, got up against a really good Indiana Wesleyan team. And for Benedictine, you know, if you want to start looking back into the mirror at history, the last time Benedictine went to Indiana and lost a playoff game against a Mid-States Football Athletic Conference team, the very next year they bounced back and found themselves in a national title game.
Yes, so, the team they lost to won the national championship.
Right. So I think this Indiana Wesleyan team's really good. The Ravens had a great season. We started seeing some pieces come on for them. What, 23, 24 all-conference selections? Coach Pops, congratulations to him.
Yay, how good is that? Woo-hoo!
As the assistant coach of the year for the Coaches Association.
Uh-huh.
That's a pretty cool deal for him, and well-deserved.
Now, I tell you what, and if you look at the Ravens' schedule, you lose two games. You end up at 11-2. First game that first game Benedictine lost was in week 2 in Des Moines to the number 2 team in the nation on our school record field goal on the last play of the game, okay? So you almost, you're ahead. You almost beat number 2. Then you go on the road, take a 700-mile, 3-day bus trip to play, the number 4 team in the nation and lose in a competitive game. And those are your 2 L's this year. And I'm not so sure that this Indiana Wesleyan team, especially with some of the teams ahead of them who have fallen, they got a real shot at this thing. They got a legitimate shot.
They do. So real quick, we're going to run over the games that were last week. Grandview sneaks by Lindsey Wilson 10-7. Northwestern just continues to pummel teams 52-27 against a Marion team who played nip and tuck with Indiana Wesleyan. They're both out of that mid-states. I'm going to tell you, right now, I don't know that there's a team any better than Northwestern. And then Kaiser goes to Morningside, knocks off the Mustangs 29-28, and we're on to round the semifinals, okay? Indiana Wesleyan, I think, got the short straw here, because if I wanted to pick a team, it was not Northwestern, okay? I would rather have played Grandview. Well, Kaiser gets to go to Grandview. Those two teams met just last year.
Okay, you talk about the short stick. Kaiser had their first week a 16-hour road trip. Their second game, was all the way from, Fort Lauderdale up to Orange, or up to Sioux City. And now this week they got to go to Des Moines?
Yeah.
I mean, they will have traveled over 10,000 miles for 3 games?
Yeah, and for them, the silver lining is Durham is close to home compared to what you've been doing, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think Kaiser Grandview is going to be a great game. You talk maybe even a quick game because both those teams are going to run the ball a lot. Indiana Wesleyan is going to have their hands full going to Orange City because you look at what Northwest did in their first game of the playoffs. They scored 49 points, gave up 7. Last week scored 52 points, but did give up 27 to a much better Marion, Indiana team. So, again, if you're going to crystal ball this thing, and I'll go out on that limb, I think it's going to be Northwest and Kaiser for the national title game.
I think that's pretty fair talk, and we'll be back next week, and we'll see how that shakes out, and we'll make our national championship selection at that point.
Last night, got to go to the Nolan, and man, got to see Baker already. Isn't that crazy that we're in conference play, and not just game one of conference play? I mean, we're going to start rolling off some conference games before the Christmas break.
For sure. And the Benedictine ladies coming up with a win in the opening game to even their mark at 1-1, knocking off Baker in the first game, 69-64. Josie having a great game, 20 points to lead the way for Benedictine. Alec Kramer, a dozen. Jennifer Jacobs had 10. And Benedictine, guys, I thought played pretty well against a very well coached and improving Baker team. They're going to be very difficult when we go down to the Collins later in the year and have a rematch.
Yeah, I think that's a Baker team that, you know, afterwards you look at them and you're like, okay, you can see a vision and a direction that that program is going. Because sometimes you'll watch a game and you'll be like, that team's a long ways away from where they need to be. But right now, I think I can see where Baker's moving towards. I think they're a program that is starting to get on the right track. For Benedictine, talk about the December schedule. 6 games they're going to play here in December. 5 of those are conference games. They're going to go to William Penn, come home with Graceland, get Culver, go to Park, go to Clark, and then be home on December 30th with William Woods. So you talk about that upcoming schedule, and I don't know, if I'm maybe just looking at this glass half full, I see a lot of wins in December for this team, and that could be, you know, big for this program.
Yeah, I think that you've got a great potential for that to happen, and Benedictine getting a tough loss in game one, the ladies did, you know, up at Cedar Rapids the other day, Saturday. So, yeah, for BC, it could be a really interesting, and I'm going to tell you, not that it's going to be decided by the end of December, but you're going to know a lot about this team and have a pretty good idea how they're going to be shaking things out, you know, at the semester break.
Yeah, because, okay, they've got Park, who is 2-5, Graceland, who's 5-3, but they're 1-2 in conference play. I think the team right now that maybe is standing out to me a little bit, and I'm going, okay, I see you over there, Jeanette, and that's Culver Stockton. Jeanette Bruggen has the Wildcats 7-1 and 2-0 in the conference. So, you know, we talked about that the other day. It was one of those blasts from the past. Like, how long do you think it's been? She's been there 10 years. And, you know, all of a sudden, that Culver team's starting to play a little better basketball.
So, for the Lady Ravens, it was a good one. For the Benedictine guys, it was just a tough, tough game as they battled and battled. And it just couldn't quite get over the hump, dropping one to Baker last night. BC at 3-5 and 1-1 in the conference. Baker, they're good. 7-1. They're 2-0 in heart play. And for Benedictine last night, I tell you what, Preston Reynolds, one of the freshmen that Coach Moody has brought in, he's going to be really good for 4 years. 18 points in that game last night. And not just 18. You can get 18 by shooting 50 times, you know, and hitting a few of them. He was 8 of 11 shooting the ball, had 6 rebounds, had 3 steals, 3 assists, blocked the shot, only 1 foul. I mean, great line for Preston.
Yeah, and Preston Reynolds is going to be one of those guys. You start talking about the points like that, and the Ravens are going to need points. He's one of those guys that 8 of 11 is good, but maybe I need you to take 15, 16, 18 shot attempts because, you know, looking for a few more points, but again, a guy who plays good defense, and that's what Coach Moody is going to love.
And he's the prototypical new kind of a guard. You know, in the old days, you could have a guard who is 5'10 or 11, 6'5 guard.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what's crazy.
And handles the ball.
Yeah, and so it used to be 6'5, 6'6, those were your bigs, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And the problem is now you need to be 6'3, 6'5 to be a ball handler out topside, you know? I mean, 6 foot is bare minimum. And now you're talking about bigs that are anywhere from 6'9 to 6'10, you know, somewhere through there. And last night, Baker, again, we've seen a lot of teams move away from that aircraft carrier type body style, but Baker has done it well over the years,
yeah.
Right? Kobe Buffalo, me there for years, was really good. You know, the Dos Santos way back when, and I'm hitting the I'm hitting the rewind on you. But again, last night they had a big underneath that's going to be tough in this conference.
Now, Braden Wiggs is just tall. He's wide. He's strong. Hard to move. Hard to get around. And, you know, he'll throw in another 10 points for you last night. Perfect at the free throw line. Big guys usually aren't, but he was really, really good at the free throw line, 4-4. And so, yeah. Baker, a really good team, and they're going to be a contender in this conference also. It's going to be a good, hard conference this year.
Yeah, talk about the conference and how good it is at the moment. Baker out on top, Evangel, and okay, so Baker, Evangel, Mid-America, William Penn, all four are undefeated. Then you drop down to Central Methodist, who's played that odd number of games. They played three. They are 2-1. Then you come to Peru, Park, Benedictine, and Valley, all 1-1, Graceland 1-2, and then teams looking for their first win, Clark, Culver, Mount Mercy, and Grandview. Can I tell you, I think Grandview is going to have an off year for sure this year. Taking a look at games coming up around the conference on Saturday, Missouri Valley is going to be at Peru State, Evangel will be at Grandview, Culver at Park, Clark will travel to Mid-America. Central Methodist will be at Mount Mercy. Graceland will be at Baker. And we talked about it. Ravens going to be up in the Penn Gym up in Oskaloosa, Iowa. Also, talking to Coach Moody, I'm sure he's okay with getting some of these longer road trips out of the way now.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah, like, yeah, get them
like
done while the weather's nice.
You'd much rather go to Iowa this time of the year than in 60 days.
Yeah. So anyway, basketball season is underway, and we will have plenty of it coming your way. Stick around. We're going to have coming up next to our interview. We talked with Schaefer Schutz halftime of the game Saturday. It was such a good conversation. We thought you would enjoy it. So stick around. We're going to have Schaefer on it, and more Sports Look continues right after this. We're joined at halftime today here in Indiana by Schaefer Schutz, former quarterback for the Benedictine Ravens. Schaefer, it's so good of you to take time out, man. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for thinking of me. This is a lot of fun.
You and I were kidding as we were just getting started here. People would look at the program, and around here it was Schaefer Sheets, but even though Coach Wilcox would never get it that way, it's Schaefer Shoots, so we're going to try to do it right. All these years later, we're going to try to get it right, Schaefer.
Love it.
And let's talk a little bit about Benedictine football and when you were playing, and we're going to kind of tie this together because you were quarterbacking the Ravens the last time they made it this far into the postseason, like we're at here today in Indiana, and you played Benedictine 16 through 19, and man, those were wonderful days, wonderful seasons, and so many great guys. We're going to talk about some of them.
Yeah, awesome. Looking forward to it.
Okay, let's first of all, your predecessor, the guys who you kind of followed, even though you played, you know, 16 to 19, do you remember, like, Jake Kester and, who was it? Was it Kyle Harmick, right? The guys who are there prior to you?
Yes. Yep, both of them. Yep.
Okay. And did you get to practice and work with them? I mean, were they, like, mentoring you a little bit as you were making that transition from high school ball into college ball?
100%. Both of them. And even more specifically, Jake Kester has been, he's actually going to be in my wedding in May and work with him. We both work at the same company, City Rent-A-Truck. He's my roommate for a little bit after college as well. So really close with Jake specifically. And he did a good job of, you see it on TV, you know, and it's not as big of a deal, I think, at the college level as it is, you know, at the level beyond that, but new quarterbacks come in and it's, a lot of guys are a little standoffish, maybe, and that just is not the case at BC. It wasn't for me, and I hope that, you know, Garrett would say the same, that it wasn't the case for him either. It's really a kind of a bonding experience with those guys. We go through a lot, and Jake did a great job of helping prepare me and kind of let me know and let me get a sneak peek into how he prepared each week, things he was looking at. I would definitely say that. And I had some mentorship from Jay Kester.
And, you know, I think it's got very important, or I would assume it is, and I'll let you, you know, expand on that a little bit, that smooth transition when you go from the guy who'd been there before to the guy who steps in. I mean, for that to go smoothly is imperative for the success of the team because even though the quarterback may change, there are a lot of other guys on the team who are going across that line.
Yeah, 100%. And listen, you know, I talked to Garrett about this actually not too long ago. It's Benedictine College is a little bit different in the sense that it's a kind of a legacy that you're playing for. You're playing for the guys before you, and you're also playing for the guys after you. And that was a big deal for me when I played. I know it was for Jake as well, that we want to pass the baton off to somebody that cares, somebody that wants to win, and somebody that's going to, you know, uphold the reputation and the legacy that the Benedictine College has built and Coach Wilcox has built for that football program. So it is a big deal. It is incredibly important. And I think the last few transitions have gone pretty smoothly.
Schaefer, when you were at Benedictine, the team was kind of making another transition, kind of from a previous style of football to a more open, you know, there were more receivers, and, you know, certainly your numbers reflect that. I mean, you're number three in career passing yards. I mean, you have the best throwing percentage of, like, pretty much anybody, 60% completions, almost 7,000 yards of passing. I mean, it was and still is a time when, you know, it's less 3 yards in a cloud of dust like it was when I was coming up, and more open that thing up and let it go.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that, you know, I don't think it was as much me as it was we just had some stud athletes. And it got to a point where it's how do you get those guys the ball? Aaron Jackson being one, and I'm sure that's a name you're going to bring up a little bit later, but, you know, that's somebody that needs the ball in his hands as often as possible. Logan Harris, Alex Blake, I mean, we had a crew that all really, really good athletes. Trey Adger, that I know just got done playing, but played when I played as well. And it's that was a way to get them the ball, is just throwing it. And then obviously, you know, the run game supported it, and we had a fantastic running game as well. But I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that we were just trying to get creative and get the ball in the athletes' hands.
And I am a huge advocate, and we might talk a little bit about this, the desire, the need for a team to be successful, you've got to have some kind of a balance. Because if you're just throwing to an Aaron Jackson or an Alex Blake, or even in your first years, a Christian Hack and Jameel Kirkland and some of those names that, you know, that we don't think about maybe as much as we should anymore, but mm-hmm. without a Marquise and a Charlie Neihardt and a Tyler Hennis and, you know, some of those guys, that passing game is not what it can be.
100%. And then at the game this past weekend, I was talking to Tom Metzger about this a little bit, where it's just fun, where it's you come up to the line, and if the defense wants to load the ball, that's fine, we'll throw the ball. If you want to spread it out, stop the pass, that's fine, we'll run the ball. And it's a really fun place to be when you do feel like you have that balance and kind of that firepower to be able to just pick and choose and still be successful. And that was definitely, you know, a few years where we had the ability to run the ball successfully, and we had the ability to throw the ball successfully.
We're visited with Schaefer Schutz, former Benedictine quarterback. And Schaefer, you talk about, you know, that mix and that blend, but a lot of it comes from the quarterback and the reads. And maybe people should appreciate the time that you, the time that Garrett, whoever's quarterback in the team, puts in preparing for a game, looking at those defenses, analyzing them. And it's not like you got time to sit down and, you know, and pull out your calculator and punch up some numbers. You got to glance up there. You got to make an immediate read on maybe even one guy, where he's at, where he moved to, and then decide what that play is going to be like.
Absolutely. And it's definitely the college athletes in general, and specifically the football players at Benedictine College, take it seriously. It's just as much of an academic type situation as it is athletic. I think a lot of people don't realize that. We spend just as much time, if not more, in a classroom as we do on the field practicing. And a lot of that's a testament to the coaching staff, making sure that we're in there. And a lot of it is to the players, too. A lot of guys take on, you know, some extra film work, extra classroom work when they have time, and I think it shows on the field.
Now that this team has moved into the territory that your team in 2018 has moved into, getting, you know, through that first round game, let's talk about that. That is, for me, the tough one, because, you know, you've just got to get in. Once you get in, things can happen, but that first game is so crucial, and that first game is so hard to win, and you know what that's like.
It really is. I don't know why. You'd think, you know, the further you get through the playoffs, maybe a little more anxiety or a little more weight kind of follows with that, but it definitely, for me, in that entire, you know, playoff run, that first game was the most nerve-wracking. And I don't know why that is, but it, you just really want to win that first one. You want to keep pushing. You want to win it for your teammates and obviously for the fan base and the community. And Once you get through that first one, I don't want to say it gets easier, but at least for me, the nerves fell back a little bit.
So tell me a little bit about what's in these guys' heads right now. Here they are. They're moving into, you know, quarterfinal rounds. There are only 8 teams left, 4 games going on still in the nation, in the NAIA. You know, what are they feeling like? You know, what's the prep like? How are you going about it in your head?
Yeah, these guys have a great mindset. I've been fortunate enough to talk to a few of them, and Garrett being one of them. They are very much so adopting the mentality 1-0. Just who do we got this week? What do we need to do to execute this week's game plan? What do we need to do to win? And let's do it. And I feel like the 2018 team did the same. I would be lying to you if I said that you don't see some other things and you're not paying attention to some other games. But the more you can pull yourself back on track, focus on the immediate job at hand and just completing that, doing the best of your ability to win each week. You know, I think it was successful in 2018, and I think it's been successful for these guys as well.
Schaefer, are you a 1-11 guy? You know, each guy does his one of the 11th parts of every down and every play?
Absolutely. And I, you know, anybody that's not, and you, believe it or not, there are guys that will make kind of some weird comments about that. Yeah, I mean, I'm not super mathematically inclined, but in my brain, that really makes a lot of sense. Where it's if you have 11 guys all doing their specific job each and every play, and they win their job, you win more plays than the other team. Typically, the scoreboard reflects it. You get to move on to the next week.
Now, you had the great fortune in the postseason of having a run of home games. You know, your first several home games turned out to be at home because, you know, kind of the dominoes fell that way and gave you an opportunity to be there. Then, of course, you had the road game, and it was a game that I think there was many or more Raven fans in Salina at Kansas Western that day than there were Coyote fans. But, you know, talk a little bit about the difference between that home playoff game and what it takes to prep yourself and climb on that bus and trek off cross country for a road game in a postseason.
Yeah. And it's at times it'll feel a little bit different in the postseason just because sometimes those trips are a little bit longer, which that 2018 year, Salina wasn't too bad. The year before that, that St. Francis playoff game was a little bit of a trek. And not that it wears on you. These guys are used to traveling. They're professionals. They know it's a business trip that they're going on. But at the same time, it's nice playing at home. It's nice to have the field in your backyard. It's nice to have a home field crowd there. And it's, you know, at the end of the day, wherever you play, you just got to win the game. But it is definitely nice to have the convenience of just walking, you know, in your backyard to the facility and getting ready and playing a game.
Schaefer Schutz is with us, and Schaefer, you just brought back one of my recurring nightmares as I wake up in the middle of the night, cold sweats, and I'm seeing myself in Fort Wayne. That may have been one of the most brutal, terrible ordeals ever, but, you know, when it came to a football game, particularly a postseason game, there were so many things that went into that awful evening, and yet the Ravens were just inches away from a win there.
Yeah. Yeah, and it definitely hurt to lose that one. I felt terrible for the guys that graduated that year. For the guys that returned, I don't think you could create a better learning experience. You mentioned the climate there. Definitely the worst that I've ever played in. And it was, I remember, now that we're talking about it, I remember it was a game that was supposed to take place in the afternoon. And so we got there, we were warming up, pouring down rain, lightning hit. We had to go back inside, undress, and then they rescheduled it for a 6:30, 7:30 game. And when we came back at 6:30, 7:30, all the gear just soaked that you're changing back into, cold, wet. And went back out. It didn't really matter when you got back out there. It was cold and wet anyway. But definitely a rough game. Obviously wanted to win it, but what a great way to transition into the next year.
And, yeah, I will never forget. It was like playing on an ocean of water. I mean, there was water standing everywhere. It was coming down it was just deluge. I was looking for the Ark to come sailing by. I mean, it was just horrific. And yet you guys were able somehow to get beyond that and pull it together and play a great game against a team that goes to the national championship game.
Coach Wilcox always said it was kind of his mantra, and then the team adopted it naturally. Come from the head coach, he no matter what the weather was, he always would, I can hear him still in the back of my head, advantage Benedict. Doesn't matter what it is, whether it's raining, whether it's cold, whether it's windy, whatever it is, the same guys that you're playing against have to deal with it, and we're going to handle it better than them. And I think we did that in a lot of situations.
Did that game make you better? And was that game a part of the 2018 season ultimately?
I would say so. It was obviously a heartbreak loss, but I think it was validation that we needed. Francis went on to win the national championship. We were their closest game for the full year. And I think that 2017 year was the first time, at least for the group of guys that were there, I think, to have the realization that, hey, we're a good ball club here. We can win. We can compete with the best. We know we're good enough. We deserve it. We belong to be here. It's a game we should have won. And I think when you make that realization, you prepare differently for the upcoming season. You expect different things each week from yourself and from your teammates. And I think it definitely transferred over into 2018.
And, of course, here we are today in Marion, Indiana. And, you know, it is like a stone's throw from Fort Wayne. I mean, we took the same route, only just stopped like 20 miles short of where we were last time. And you kind of look back and you go, wow, you know, it's kind of eerie in a way that you're back here. And yet, you know, here's a chance for these guys to play another Indiana team and, you know, show them what this Heart of America Athletic Conference football is like.
No, it's awesome. And I have no doubt these guys are, you know, it's halftime right now. We're doing this interview a few days prior, but I have no doubt these guys are already taking it to them and are going to have a strong second half. And I think BC will be represented in the state of Indiana a little bit better this go around.
Let's talk about your championship game. We went down to Daytona after the, you know, and at the end of that 2018 season. How fantastic was it to have made it to the national championship game, and then to look out at that group of fans and see so many Raven fans in that place. It just doesn't seem to matter where Benedictine plays. You look in the stands, fans everywhere.
That's what makes it so special. And that's what makes it so much fun. And that what you just said is kind of a testament to the point I brought up earlier about Benedictine college football is a legacy. It's not you don't play here, leave and have no vested interest in what's going on. It's former players, former students, people that didn't even go to Benedictine College, whether they lived in town or whether they lived in the area or knew somebody that went to school there. There are a lot of diehard Benedictine College fans out there. And it's tough to explain to other people that haven't, you know, been a part of this community, but it's a ton of fun, makes the playing experience specifically exponentially better. And it's energizing. When you look into the stands and see all the people that are there for you, for the college, for the program, and want to see it do well.
Schaefer, what was it that drew you to Benedictine? Why did you, out of all the schools, and I'm sure you had many opportunities to play in a lot of places, why Benedictine? What was it?
You know, a lot of it had to do with the people. Coach Wilcox being one. I've talked about him in the past. He's just kind of it's hard to put your thumb on it, but there's just you want to be a part of something with that guy. I remember him coming and talking to me. I went to school in Kansas City at Park Hill South, and he came and talked to me and Tanner McLaren, my roommate throughout college and my high school teammate. And I remember when he left, I was like, man, I want to be on that guy's team. I want to be a part of whatever that guy is striving for, whatever he's trying to achieve. And Coach Wilcox was a big part, and the rest of the coaching staff obviously had a great relationship with Coach Johnson early on. He took me under his wing and really focused on my development, not only as a player, but as a human being. And also when I was on campus, I don't think I held the door for myself the entire time I was on campus. It just was kind of it was almost weird. People were a little too happy, in my opinion. And I come to find out later on that that's just the place that it is. It's just a jovial, joyous campus. And I'm sure that it still is. And it's a place that'll pull you in.
Okay. One last question. From a guy who has been there, as this Benedictine team gets ready to go for the second half, win this game here today, what kind of advice? What if Schaefer Schutz is brought in to talk to the guys before next week, what is it that you're going to tell them? What do you say?
That's a great question. Probably a couple different things. The first one, at the end of the day, I know I've talked about the legacy and the, you know, all the people you're playing for and the things you're doing. It's a game. right? It's, you're there because you love playing the game. You're fortunate enough to be able to play a game as a 22-year-old or 21-year-old, and realize that at the end of the day that it's, there's a lot of pressure that you're going to feel and some tense moments, and you want to come through in a tight spot for your teammates and for the fans and for the coaching staff. But at the end of the day, we're playing a game, and it will be tough. There's going to be times that you'll be a little stressed out, but at the same time, do your best to step back, soak it in, you know, experience everything, and realize that you're just playing a game.
And this many years later, I hope that you're looking back at those games and reflecting on them and pretty happy with how it had all went and feel good about it.
100%. I've been in college, changed my life, and I know it's changed a lot of these guys' lives for the better, and wouldn't trade it for anything.
Schaefer Schutz, it's so good of you to let me steal a little bit of your time here today and get some of your thoughts and reflections. We appreciate that. We appreciate all the things you've done for BCN. We look forward to seeing you at a game again here really, really soon. It's always great to see you.
Awesome. Thank you for thinking of me. This was a lot of fun.
Sports Look here on Care Radio, KAIR-FM, Horton Atchison. Schaefer, thanks very much. It's always good to hear from former Ravens. And thus we focus now on the rapid fire segment of this, and we'll talk about all kinds of things, including the Kansas City Chiefs, who, you know, they got by the Rams. It never felt like the Rams were part of the ballgame, and yet it was only a 2-score win, 26-10.
Yeah, the Chiefs did so many things that just were out of character. They were, what, 1 of 5 or 1 of 6 in the red zone. But, again, you just never felt like the Rams were going to be able to get over the hump. Kansas City, their defense is starting to play really well. Legarius Sneed, you had another interception from Nick Bolton. So, again, I think the Chiefs' defense is kind of where they need to keep improving.
You know, Sneed, when he went out for a minute, they did the, you know, they ran him through a quick checkout. I was a little bit concerned. I'm not going to lie to you. I was like, they don't need him to be out.
Is it kind of crazy right now that 15 is on pace to break the record for passing yards in a season? He's like on pace for 5,600 yards passing.
And it doesn't even feel like it, does it?
It doesn't. I mean, like, I think I saw a, you know, you see everybody in the world wants to do their power rankings, right? And who they have number one. And one of them had the Chiefs as the number one team in the NFL. And their description was, they just make the hard look easy. And that's maybe true, right? Because Kansas City just does things, and you're like, yeah, you expect that. And there are a lot of fan bases that are going, we want that, you know, I mean, like, so I think we're a little spoiled here in this area.
Well, I'm going to say, you touched on it a little bit with Benedictine football and the great season and enjoy it. I'm going to share that same advice with Chiefs fans. There is going to be a day, all right, when there is no more Travis Kelce, there is no more Mahomes, there is no more, you know, all of these guys. They're going to retire someday, and they're going to be gone. You know what I say? You better be enjoying this stuff right now.
Yeah, I mean, because it's true. Travis Kelce especially is one of those guys who is nearing retirement, I think, faster than we would like to think. But yet he continues to have better numbers each year as he gets older. But at some point, Father Time has to catch up, right?
Because, yeah, but if he retires, you know, I would think that he would still have a great career in entertainment because I love listening to the guy. He's a riot. And I would go to any of his, like, any show that he put on, I would be down with it.
And especially if you're a podcast person, you're looking for a podcast, the one where Travis and Jason Kelce are together.
They're great.
It's fantastic. But yes, I think that, you know, Kelce for sure is the one you have to keep an eye on because at some point he, you know, his numbers have to drop off just because of the law of averages says at some point it has to, but he's playing spectacular. And for the Chiefs to have a down year and be right now one of the best teams in football, if not the best team in football, that has to scare some teams around the NFL.
Now, that said, Kansas City, if you look at the numbers, they've got the one of the weakest schedules remaining because they've played all these really good teams, except you've got a very good game coming up this Sunday. You're on the road against a former Super Bowl guy and a guy who has had great success against you. Joe Burrow has kind of been a nemesis for Kansas City in his short career.
Yeah, he's been a problem for Kansas City. And if you look back, that the problem becomes – This is a team who knocked you out of the playoffs last year,
yep.
But for Kansas City, I think it's different than – look at Bills-Chiefs, look at Chiefs-Bengals, okay? When the Bills beat the Chiefs back at Arrowhead just a few weeks ago, they celebrated like they won the national championship, and it was a thing for them. It became a problem. For the Kansas City Chiefs right now, I don't feel like the Bengals are that thorn in the side. I don't feel like – you know, Kansas City's really hung up on that game. If they win it, great. If they lose it, okay. But I think that you have to, if you're Kansas City, win this game because you need to bring Burrow back to earth a little bit, right? Because the more he gets up on you, the more he starts feeling pretty good about himself and the harder he's going to beat later on. Because how many times do we talk about it? Don't let bad teams hang around, right? Because then they start getting confidence. And I don't think the Bengals are bad. I'm just saying that you don't want to give Joe Burrow a little more confidence because you need in the back of his mind of, they did beat me that one time. So I think this game on Sunday should be fantastic. It's a 3:25 start. Kansas City, a 2-point favorite on the road. So you figure if it was at Arrowhead, it'd be 5, but still within the touchdown. And I don't know. I don't see how these two teams stay under 52.5.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. You'd think that they're going to put some points on the board in this one. Now, if you're ready for football tonight, Bills and Patriots, you know, this is going to be a better game than it would have been a month ago.
Yeah, so the Bills are playing a little worse. The Patriots are maybe playing a little better.
Yeah, I think so.
So I think that this game has potential to be very interesting tonight. I'll actually tune into a Thursday night game, right?
Yeah. Bills come in at 8-3, the Patriots coming in at 6-5, and it's a 3.5 Buffalo lead, you know, -3.5 on that line.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think the Bills win, but again, they've been sneaking out games recently, so I don't have a whole lot of confidence right now in the Bills. They aren't the team they were a month ago.
10-1 Eagles Sunday are going to be at home with the Titans, and Philadelphia at home is only a 5-point favorite, and that one surprises me.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is, you know, just for the Titans, you look at Derrick Henry and you give him a lot of, you know.
I give him a lot of credit.
A lot of credit.
I do.
Right? And so I think that, you know, if Derrick Henry can go off in that ball game, the Titans can keep it close, but the Eagles have just found ways to win games, and I think that they win that thing and probably jump over that 44.5 points.
Two of the worst teams, I think, in football, the Raiders and the Chargers, two disappointing teams this year, and that is a toss-up in Vegas.
Yeah, it's out there in the desert. I don't know. I'm probably pulling for the Raiders because, if nothing else, if they could beat the Chargers, Kansas City would really have the division locked up.
Yeah, and just take one number off that magic number. Sunday afternoon, you're going to have Dolphins at 49ers. Now, this is probably the matchup, other than the Kansas City-Cincinnati game, the matchup of the two best teams, you know, the best pairing, I think. And this is a postseason, you know, possibility.
Yeah, and what's crazy is, I don't know if you saw the national coverage map showing the, you know, the regions of what game's going to be on in the afternoon. The Chiefs-Bengals game took up the entire country, except for that little cutout that was San Francisco area and California over to Las Vegas and down. And then, like, South Florida, like Tampa and South will get that Dolphins game. But if you're up in Jacksonville, you're watching the Bengals game. I mean, that. So I think this should be a fantastic game, Dolphins 49ers. The Dolphins head coach was a former coordinator with the 49ers. I don't know. I think it'll be a good test for the Dolphins. You talk about an uphill battle the rest of the season. The Dolphins have, like, the toughest schedule, you know, at the end of this season.
Sunday night football, Colts at Cowboys. Well, I don't even know what to say about this. These are two teams that I don't know how there are some people around who are going to care. Cowboys are a prohibitive favorite, double-digit favorite.
Yeah, 11-point favorite. The over-under is 43.5, but I watched that Colts game the other night, and I'm going to tell you, that team can't do anything. The Cowboys
are playing pretty well.
Yeah, the Cowboys will have, I don't know, probably half a dozen sacks in that thing because that offensive line for the Colts has been pretty porous. I just think that thing will be a runaway and probably won't watch a whole lot of it.
Speaking about not very good football, Monday night it'll be the Saints and the Buccaneers.
Yeah,
only people are going to tune that in to see Brady and see if he's still out there.
Yeah, people will probably still turn it on and see if Breeze is still playing for the Saints. I mean, that shows you how little anybody knows about the Saints right now.
Now, let's go shift over to the NCAA because they have announced the championship games were all decided for the various conferences over the course of the past weekend. And you got the Big Five, the Power Five, started with the Pac-12. And Utah backs in. And that was awesome. As you're listening to the other games and watching this come together, Utah will be at number 4, USC. And that is going to be tomorrow night.
Yeah, so that's a Friday night game, 7 p.m., USC, a 2.5-point favorite. And I think, again, it's the whole USC thing, the West Coast thing. People aren't paying attention. But Lincoln Riley's got that team playing really well. Nothing would excite me more than Utah to knock off USC.
These Utes are having a good year. How about the Big 12, Kansas State, into the championship game? And they're going to be at number 3, TCU. TCU, everybody's talking about they are a playoff team.
Yeah, and so people are saying that they're a playoff team, whether they win or lose. I'm not so sure I believe that, even though they are undefeated to this point. I think if you lose to Kansas State, like that might bump them out of the playoff, and that would send a whole lot of things spiraling if they lose that game. So I think Kansas State probably actually wins it, too. So
how about the LSU-Georgia, the SEC battle? LSU is number 14, and of course, Georgia is number 1, and Georgia is like 17, 18-point favorite in this game, and, yeah, you know, they probably ought to be.
Yeah, probably should. Don't get me wrong. I think LSU has the horses to win it. I just don't really think it becomes a game.
Wolverine fan thinks they should be number 1 instead of Georgia, though. They are number 2, and in the Big Ten championship game against an unranked Purdue team, and again, another 16, 17-point favorite. That's a Saturday night game. Michigan should just absolutely embarrass the Boilermakers.
Yeah, and see, my problem with Michigan is they're going to jump up and down. They're going to say, but we're the best team in the country.
Yeah.
You play in the Big Ten, all right? Like, step back a second and understand that you don't play anybody.
They beat Ohio State.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, most every team should beat Ohio State. But Purdue is into the title game of the Big Ten. Purdue is 8-4, people. Like, I'm just throwing that out there that they are not that great. You know, they beat Northwestern 17-9 2 weeks ago. Do you realize Northwestern didn't win a single game in the United States this year? The only game they won was when they went to Ireland and beat Nebraska. Okay, so just throwing that out there. I just am not a fan, you know this, of the Big Ten, but I kind of hope Purdue wins, right? Like, you just throw it out there.
ACC championship game is going to be Clemson, who really stubbed their toe, and they're going to be up against North Carolina. That is also a Saturday night game.
Yeah, North Carolina playing pretty decent right now. They're playing way better than their basketball program, who lost again last night to Indiana. But I just think Clemson, Dabo, this would be a big Clemson game.
Hey, our upcoming sports schedule on Care Radio, jam-packed. We're going to have high school hoops tomorrow night, ACCHS at MHMA. Saturday, Benedictine from Oskaloosa will be up there. Ravens at William Penn. Tuesday, MHMA and Jefferson County North. Want to thank Kamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, High Voltage Bar and Dance, Exchange Bank, and Petro Convenience Store. Till we greet you next time, for Gus Couch, Tom Couch. So long, everybody.